one of the things you've talked about is it's not so much that Biafra has to be an independent state, but that has to be economically viable, and you can't really have that with Nigeria as it is. How do we get there?
We cannot be economically viable if we are not politically viable.
Right.
And political viability means complete and absolute independence.
It has to have, yeah.
We must be independent. Yeah. And again, God creates countries and nations, mm-hmm. and not man. Mm-hmm. There are many ways that nations can emerge. It is always an organic process. We understand that. We respect that. What people, most commentators, don't appreciate about Africa, and which most Africans are a bit slightly uncomfortable with, is that somebody coming from Europe and without regard for your culture, your traditions, your way of life, saying you are now in one country and your name is,
yeah,
Nigeria.
Right.
There is something unnatural about it.
Yes.
I said to the British government, if you had come, conquered my people, which is a natural human process,
yeah,
that is entirely natural.
Right.
If you had come, conquered our people, made us English, I can live with that.
Yeah.
But to come and hand over a children of God over to something completely alien, this same culture that we have in the north, which is an Islamic culture, tried to take us over many years ago and they failed.
Mm.
You now came and completed the cycle for them.
Mm.
There is something evil about it.
Yeah, something inorganic about it.
Inorganic.
Yeah.
Very, very inorganic. And you cannot. We don't talk about economic development, because before you talk about economy, you talk about things like policies, but macro and micro, all the rest,
right,
of it. You are dealing with people who cannot differentiate between macro and micro.
No, absolutely.
That's
right.
A problem.
Yeah. Education is key for the world outside Biafra, and that's where this starts. The political has to start in the education.
That's correct.
When you speak to people in the UK, people in the US, is there an openness to independence for Biafra?
No, there isn't. It's what you get is very condescending, wishy-washy. These are,
yeah,
these are black Africans. Really, what do they know? Sort of attitude. We know best than they do. And we try as much as possible to enlighten and educate the American and, by extension, the European audience to the fact that before you had freedom and liberty in any part of the world, in Biafra land, we had freedom and liberty.
Mm.
Before you had political asylum in any other part of the world, where I come from, there was political asylum being granted to people. That is the meaning of Biafra anyway. Come and join if you believe in our value system. We had a series of both political, legal, and legislative structures that endured for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
These were unceremoniously swept away in the name of, I don't know, civilization or advancement.
Right.
Therefore, the British must be questioned, or the mentality or the psyche of Europeans and, by extension, Americans must be put to the test to explain, to rationalize why the emergence of states in Africa cannot be allowed to adopt the same organic route by which every other civilized nation emerged.
Mm.
Why is that impossible? That's what I ask Americans and Europeans.
And their answers are not good. There are no
can
answers.
Be.
Yeah.
They don't have any answers to it. All they say is that, oh, why didn't you just get on with it? I want the same things that you have in America. I want liberty. I want freedom. I want all the rest of it. That is what makes you a human being, or else you're an animal. And being forced to live in cages in Africa, or being forced to live more or less like animals, is not a situation we are prepared to tolerate for very long.
No. Yeah.
Death is better.
Have there been armed clashes between Biafrans and Boko Haram? Has there been a defense of Biafrans?
No, not at all, because we are not allowed to defend ourselves. They can kill us. They can get arms flowing in from Lebanon, from Iran, from Saudi Arabia. There are jihadists coming from all over the place, coming in there. There was a plane load of arms that came in was detained at the airport from Egypt. The Arab world, that is what drives me insane, the Arab world and the Islamic world are busy supporting Boko Haram in their stated aim of spreading Islam to Christians in Nigeria. The Christian world are not reciprocating. They're not coming to our rescue. I don't know how you can defend yourself against somebody who is armed with RPGs, armed with AK-47s. I don't know if you do that through prayer and fasting. I do not know.
Right.
But that is the sort of condition we're faced with. In other words, as we speak right now, the process of Islamization is gathering momentum and no one is doing anything.
Right. It's medieval. It's you will convert or you will die.
They crucified some people. Was it 2 days ago? I think we've got the pictures on Facebook.
They actually crucified some people.
Yeah. The same thing ISIS is doing, that they're doing, that program. You either convert or we kill you. And I don't know why the world expects us to deal with that. It's either there is something going on. It's either everyone else is a Muslim. That's how I say sometimes. Like everyone in the West is a Muslim. That's what I say. Because you couldn't possibly keep quiet when such a thing is going on.
No.
It's terrible.
No.
Terrible.
You're opening my eyes in ways I knew this was going to be eye-opening. I did not realize what is happening. Who is Boko Haram organically? Are they a government creation? Are they...
Boko Haram is, you need to understand the geopolitics of Nigeria to then start comprehending the concept or the ideology that drives the insanity that is Boko Haram. In the north, you have the areas you call the Mohammedan Emirates of the North. Mm-hmm. These are people who are predominantly, by ancient culture and tradition, Islamic. They are Hausa, Fulani people. In the west, coming down near Lagos, is you have the Yoruba people, and in the east, you have the Biafran people. Now, the Hausa Fulani people, we are told by the British that they have the right to rule in perpetuity Nigeria. The British in 1953 and 57 were involved in a massive fraud to rig the census results. In other words, they skewed the numbers to always favor the Hausa Fulani people that they may remain in power. And the reason for that is that the British is scared that Biafran people, especially the Igbos, are somehow human, that we can think properly.
Yeah.
And we have the oil. The oil wells, the reserves, everything is where we come from.
In Biafra.
And the British couldn't retain or sustain their colonial presence in Africa because the USA asked them to leave. So what they now did is to take the control of the oil, hand it over to a group of people they think they can manipulate very easily. That's all. That's what has happened. And now they now believe that they have the right to rule. Unfortunately for them, President Goodluck Jonathan, the incumbent, emerged out of circumstances that could be described as somehow mysterious. He came up as the president, and now they don't like it. Three people funded Boko Haram. The ex-president, head of state Buhari, another ex-head of state, Hausa Fulani Islamic person called Babangida, another vice president, Atiku Abubakar. They consciously went out to fund Boko Haram. Because Buhari said, after Jonathan won the 2011 elections, that I will make the country ungovernable. He said it openly. And they went ahead to do it by killing poor, defenseless Biafran Christians. Because they know that Christians around the world will not come to our rescue.
Yeah.
They also know that no other people will come to our rescue because they don't want us to emerge as a people. That's a problem.
Yeah. So the British don't want you to emerge as a people.
No.
Aha. Uh-huh.
That's a problem.
It's a huge problem.
Massive. But this time around, whether they like it or not.
Yeah.
I'm sure the British didn't want the USA to emerge either.
No.
Whether they like it or not, we shall emerge.
Yeah.
Or everything else there will die.
It'll have to. I mean, yes. It's one or the other at this point.
One thing has to happen either we have Biafra or we all die. There's no going back this time around. There'll be no exile, no running away. That is our land. We've lived there for thousands of years. That's where we were born. That's where we'll die.
Yeah. Will, are you all willing to go back and be there?
At the drop of a heart, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And a heartbeat.
Yeah.
We'll go there.
And obviously loved ones are there. And
they're there. My parents are there. Yeah. My loved ones are there.
Yeah.
And it's a land we've been in for, as I said,
thousands of years. And a history and a rich culture and a vibrant way of life that has literally been
obliterated.
Yeah.
You go to the book of Leviticus. 80% of what you have in the book of Leviticus occurs where I come from. 80%. 80%.
The Levitical law.
Everything. Yeah. Everything. It wasn't us. I strongly believe, this is my hypothesis. Of course, I hold on to it very strongly. As soon as the British discovered in the late 18th century, because the same Hausa Fulani people in Zamfara told them, I think I have the map somewhere in London, that across that river lies what they believe to be part of the lost tribe of Israel, all hell broke loose.
Yeah.
There was then a very systematic and deliberate policy to obliterate our history. The British first said that the Igbos don't have any history. First of all, they removed the name Biafra, which was exactly the name they used to go into treaties with us. You see there clearly written, the chiefs of Ishekiri and Biafra. They then quietly took that away to now only take a component of that, one clan alone, which is Igbo. Because in Biafra, you have the Idoma, you have the Igbo, you have the Bibio, you have the Efik, you have the Izon people, which they call Ijo, you have Ishekiri, you have Urobo, and some parts of Igala.
Wow.
These are the seven people that make up, these are the seven tribes that make up Biafra land. The British came, then isolated all the rest, those of our cousins around us, and focused attention on us. But there's one good thing about it is that in their amalgamation document that they produced in 1904 or thereabout, which I still have, they made reference, the very first time a European is referring to an African race as great. Yes, the man said the great Igbo race across the Niger.
Mm.
And that speaks volumes.
And the Niger is the river.
The river,
yes. And they, so Nigeria is taken from just drawing lines on the map from the river.
Of course, that's the name. I mean, the name is Nigeria, named after a river. Before that was the Royal Niger Company, which is a British company,
right?
Which by royal charter was running the whole place. And then from that, incrementally, I have all the paperwork that they signed. At no time did we give the British the consent to form a country called Nigeria. At no time in our history. I have all the paperwork. We gave them our land to trade.
Right.
That's all. But they went ahead and gradually decided to form a country. Despised us so much that they handed us over to Hausa Fulani Islamic Caliphate. And now they're killing us and nobody's coming to our rescue, which I think is very sad.
If we come to the rescue, how are we coming?
We need support from USA, from United States government, from the Christian community in the USA, and more importantly also from the Jewish community in the USA. They did something, in fairness to them, in 1968, 69, 70, the Jewish Congress in the USA did something. They tried to lobby the US government and Congress to do something about Biafra. From these three groups, we expect a lot to come from them to pressure the Obama administration to support what we are doing, to make sure that Biafra comes to exist. Biafra is the only natural ally that USA will ever have in Africa.
In Africa, yeah.
Natural. We are never going to bomb USA, are we? We can come here to work for you. We're never going to kill you. That's
right.
Number one.
Yeah.
We are very, very loyal, hardworking, and friendly people. Go and ask anyone, they will tell you. And I see no reason why a people that believe in the irreducibility of an individual, that believes in liberty, that believes in equality and in freedom, the same creed, the same ideals upon which this very great nation, USA, was founded upon, Why would you not naturally gravitate towards
yes.
those people? I can't understand it.
Right.
And if you want to stop the menace of Boko Haram, they should support the creation of Biafra.
Absolutely.
That's all they need to do. We don't want them to do anything. Just come at the UN or make a press statement in the White House by saying that the people of Biafra, their suffering is intolerable. We may have to revisit the issue of them still belonging to one Nigeria. That's what they need to say. That's all.
And it would change.
It's done. Yeah. It's a game changer. It's finished.
Yeah. Wow.
We don't need U.S. troops to come.
No.
We are more than capable. We held out for 3 years.
Yeah.
Against the combined minds of Britain, USSR, and the entire Arab world.
Yeah.
For 3 years. So we can deal with them. Trust me, we can. We can.
And do they want that? Does Boko Haram want that? Do they want that violent end?
They do. And sometimes in life, you need to confront them violently.
Yeah.
Or else it will continue to fester.
Yeah.
We must meet them.
And that's hard as Christians.
Yes.
That's
hard. Very, very hard, because we don't take life where we come from.
No.
In other cultures and religion and language, you call another person a human being yeah. or a person.
Yeah.
Where we come from, we say matter, which means the beauty of life.
Mm.
So you're forbidden from killing anybody.
Yeah.
You don't kill somebody, because yeah. that is the embodiment of God's creation. A person is known as madu. Madu means beauty of life.
Mm.
So you don't take life.
Mm.
Mm. So it's very hard for us.
Yeah.
But
you've been pushed.
No, we are being killed.
Yeah.
Killed. Every day.
Not pushed, killed.
Not pushed, we are being killed.
Let me ask a couple.
Sure.
I'll sit down here too. Christians, by and large, seem to be oriented towards individual faith. And they seem to be reluctant to face the fact that at times war is necessary.
Yes.
They call the concept of a holy war
yeah.
being something that you have to struggle with. How have you looked at that? How do you take your faith and the need to sometimes go to war? How does that work for you? How have you? Because you're a very thoughtful man, and I know you've had to look at these issues and defend it.
Yes, the thing is this, my faith taught me to value life, to try to live by the same tenets that have been preached over the years, as contained in the Bible. But there comes a time when self-preservation takes precedent over and above whatever we may think suits us individually. Because by going to war, we are seeking to preserve, in our case, the children of God.
Mm.
If you do nothing, you become extinct.
Mm.
And there will be no one left to worship God, will there? Where we come from. So
no,
the best thing for us to do is to try as much as possible to reason or come to some level of agreement, accommodation with our adversaries, which has failed so far. The only alternative left for us is to go and meet them wherever we can find them. And we don't have any difficulties, because the reason why you have the U.S. Army is to preserve the ideals upon which this country is founded upon. Even your own body has its own defense immune system, isn't it? Without it, the human body will perish. Everywhere you go to, even in heaven, you have angels with their swords guarding the gates of heaven, you know, against the forces of darkness and of hell. So even if you extrapolate the argument and take it away into the natural world where nature rather than reason obtains, you will still see the same phenomenon and forces at play, that there is need for you to defend yourself.
I have another question, and that is, our founding fathers had a struggle with that very issue. Is it related to England? They had a strong faith, different faiths, possibly, but they had to come up with a Declaration of Independence. You are the vocal person that has really brought together Radio Biafra. What are the coalitions you have? Do you find that you have... How would you write your Declaration of Independence? What would be included within that? What are the values? Would there be religious freedom for other people who have a different point of view?
Yes, there will be religious freedom. We've had it before. By our own, by our very nature, by our name, Biafra means come and join.
Aha.
That's the meaning of it.
Yeah.
Everybody including the Sultan of Sokoto, can seek asylum in Biafra. We'll respect him and we'll allow him to come in. It's in our nature. That's how we are. From childhood, your thoughts. If your mom is beating you up or whatever, or chastises you a lot, you just run to the next person. All you need to do is to hold them very tightly, and your mom or your dad will never touch you.
Mm.
We've always had it. So tolerance is interwoven in our essence, in our being. Freedom, freedom, freedom. In every way you can imagine it. There is a name, there's something we say will come from. Onyenachia means, I can never judge you, it's between you and your God.
Mm.
So that tells you.
Absolutely.
We are the original architects of freedom, and the British will attest to that.
Yeah.
We never had any theocracy, no dictatorship, no kings, nothing for thousands of years. We are not about to start now.
Mm.
For the first time, I think America, in the face of ISIS going into Syria and Iraq,
yeah,
has opened our eyes to the reality of the desire for a caliphate. We think of that now in terms of the Middle East, but Africa has been facing that for a long time. Talk to us about a little bit about the mission that the Islamic jihadists have within Africa to control all of Africa.
And to dovetail on that, it's because this tolerance and this freedom that Americans feel, that you feel, Boko Haram does not feel.
They don't.
And ISIS does not feel. And as near as I can tell, Islam does not feel. I'm not a judge of Islam. I don't know.
I would judge them because you don't live with them.
No.
I do.
Yeah.
So I can judge them.
Okay.
The fact of the matter is this. If you go back to the statements made by the man that brought this virulent form of Islam into Nigeria, made Othman Danfodio, from Othman Danfodio to Ahmadu Bello, the son, and right up until this very moment, there's been one common theme running through everything they have said, their ideology, their philosophy, their thinking, their way of life, which is to propagate violent Islam all the way to the ocean. That's something you must know. That work has continued unabated. Biafra is the only piece of unconquered Islamic territory in West Africa, and they are seeking to take it. They vowed to take Biafra. Is on tape, which we will supply you with, so you can see what these people are saying. When you bomb Afghanistan, when USA bombs Afghanistan, they kill us in Nigeria. When there is a cartoon of Prophet Muhammad, they kill us. Every blessed day we are dying. We live with the reality. The slow march of Islam has been ceaseless from time, encouraged by the British.
Mm.
Encouraged by the British, wherever they have been. The British government, you may wish to know, has never supported the independence of any Christian country in the world since the beginning of time. But they have always consciously and studiously supported the emergence of an independent Islamic caliphate.
Yeah.
Lawrence of Arabia.
One of the criticisms that could Lawrence come your way, or at least questions that could come your way,
yeah,
and that is Biafra does have control of the principal oil within Nigeria, were it to be formed under the present
yes,
situation.
That is correct, yes.
That is a major obstacle, I would imagine, for people who are frightened of the fact that if you do gain control, they will lose the opportunity of having access to that. How do you approach, as an independent Biafra, the issues that are around the oil, around criticisms, and the resistance that will happen to your independence on the basis of that resource alone?
The resource, we believe in development, which means the oil will have to be sold to our friends and to our partners, and in return, I'm an economist myself, in return we get vital foreign exchange with which, or foreign reserves with which to try and develop other aspects of the economy. We believe in inward investment. We would like companies from countries that are friendly and supportive of Biafra to come in to invest in Biafra. We want investment. We don't want to be like Saudi Arabia, you sell oil and you buy everything else. No.
Right.
We want tangible, concrete investments to come in. We are not going to drink the oil. is a natural resource. We need to give it to the economies of our friends to keep growing, because a very healthy U.S. economy or a very healthy EU economy is also going to be beneficial to Biafraland. So we can find export markets for our goods and services. We are like that. I mean, we are not... we understand the intricacies of world economy and the need to make available to the international market your resources to continue to fuel human development. So it is not a problem. Our oil fields and that very sector will be open to our friends, and only to our friends. Mm. You can't expect not to help us and then eventually we let you in. It's not going to work that way. But if you help us, of course, it's there for all to have access to. We've gone on record to say that oil is not our problem. All we want is freedom. Oil is not the issue. The issue is freedom. Mm. Once we have freedom and the semblance of dignity, then we can exist as human beings, because right now I don't see myself as a human being. Mm. A monkey is better than me because I don't have freedom.
Mm. One of the things that it's always impressed me, the more I've come to know about your country's history, is the productivity of your people through the ages. You have been, and now many of them who have left Nigeria are all over the world being productive, hoping that this would happen. I know when Israel eventually became its own country, there was a homecoming, and probably millions of people going to their homeland again. Is that part of your vision? Tell us a little bit about your vision for the future.
They will come back, including some of you from the USA as well. Mm. That will be the most natural home for African American people. It will be natural. That will be very, very natural for them to come to. Because if you look at the map of Biafra, which is right here in front of us, you will see that the rising sun is cleverly positioned on the black strip of the flag, which means that we bring light where there is darkness. That is what we'll do. Everybody will run open doors, not just for Biafrans, but also for African Americans that have not been able to connect with Africa for very many centuries. They can come back and become a part of it. Because mind you, most of the people that were taken away from Africa to come to work in the plantations of the USA came from the Bight of Biafra, which is where we come from. We open our doors for them to try and come back in. Everybody is welcome to come back, to be there.
One of the things they talk about in the Middle East is that none of the countries there outside of Israel pass the public square test. And the public square test is that you can stand on the corner of a street and be critical of their government and their religion and survive. It seems to me this is a stand for freedom and for liberty.
Yes.
And your focus on liberty is a very important part of what drives you.
Yes.
Talk to us a little bit about your own journey. I mean, you have gone through beatings. I understand you've been in...
Everything. I've been stripped naked and everything for my faith.
Because where... Talk to us a little bit about your journey, because it has been a personal one where you continue to be a voice for Biafra.
Yes. It started very many years ago. I was educated in England. I went to school in London, and upon graduation, I decided to serve my people because I didn't like what was going on. We have a group of friends, about six of us from Africa. We said when we graduate, we pick one tiny African country and go there and try and develop it in a very, very thoughtful and quite progressive of us. And upon graduation, the rest got very blue-chip jobs and developed cold feet. I decided to go carry on with it because I felt that the only thing that makes you human is your ability to reason. And as an African, as somebody from Biafra land, unless my land reflects what I believe I possess up here, then I have not made any telling or meaningful contribution to the advancement of mankind. So I decided to plug ahead with it. I went home initially to try and see what we can do to start a revolution on the ground, because the existing order is essentially irredeemably corrupt, as you well know. So we started it, and it didn't quite go very well. I came back to the UK, reassembled, and went back again. We met a few people. We started Radio Biafra. And we started preaching the truth in 2009. And some people were uncomfortable with it. And when I traveled home for a private family ceremony, I was kidnapped. I was beaten. I was tortured. I had people spit at me. Some urinated and poured it at me. And for speaking the truth, for telling them that the way they were doing things weren't proper. That wasn't enough. I was arrested before then at Murtala Mohammed Airport. I was detained for 8 days solitary confinement at the SSS headquarters because I was preaching Biafra, had some Biafra materials on me. And after that, I was transferred to Abuja under military escort, a five-car convoy. I was detained for 3 months, solitary confinement again. And there I met the coup plotters from Equatorial Guinea, Mark Thatcher, all the rest of them. And actually, I think the reason why God sent me there was because to save the lives of those people, I believe. Because had I not gone in there, I would have been killed. But as soon as I came out, I told Amnesty International what was going on, and then they started to sort of fight for them to be released and stuff. So I came, and then I struggled again to start Radio Biafra. People weren't forthcoming. I became homeless in England as a result of it because I was investing so much in broadcasting on shortwave, which is prohibitively expensive. And then we continued. Went on to the internet, that our budget could carry us, and then now we're on satellite. So, and it's been relentless, because one thing is, if you're doing the right thing, which I believe we're doing, you continue doing it until at a time when the world will then come to the realization that what you're saying is true, because the suffering has continued, the killings, the death, the deprivation, the deportation. I'm not sure you know that you deport people. Do you know you can deport somebody from a part of Nigeria to another?
How do you do that?
By forcibly removing them from the street.
Yeah.
Locking them up somewhere, putting them in a vehicle, and then transporting them to wherever you want them to go to.
Americans have seen, quote, the Arab Spring actually create more chaos in Africa and the Middle East. It is unchained, even worse conditions.
That's correct, yeah.
Now you're talking almost like a Christian spring. What's different about your approach? How do you move from talking about it on Radio Biafra to actually having it happen? You mentioned, boy, a couple of statements by the government of the United States would help in the UN, those kinds of things. But tell me, how does that move? What's it different? How's it different?
That's what people are waiting for. People keep asking us all the time, what is the US government stance on what we are agitating for or talking about? What is the UN saying? That's what they want to hear.
Right.
What does America think and the UN? So for us, that is the trigger. That is the catalyst that will solve a lot of problems. And the world must be able to rise up and be very mature about it, to say to themselves that in Africa, actually, we do have human beings who can reason properly and not try to be as condescending as they've been all this while. Or to
For years.
For years, I mean. That seems to be this very funny thing that self-awareness or criticism works in the West, but you, as a black person from Africa, you're not allowed to criticize yourself or something. I don't believe in that. I believe in being self-critical. If I've done something wrong, I believe in appraising myself. How we're going to do it is very simple. The American public is also very critical in this. If the American public can give us their support, that will then spur us on to go back to our people and to say that it's not, the government may not be listening, but the people that own America are listening, and we can work with them. That will then give them the impetus to go ahead and rightfully possess what belongs to them. Because one thing we're not going to have, which is what we're making it very clear to the world, is this. The status quo can't continue, I'm afraid. It cannot continue. It can't. And in terms of controlling the outcome, the aftermath of any kind of spring that may result, is that you always look at the value system of a people. That is the determinant. That determines the outcome. Those of them that believe in unwavering Sharia Islam, you always know that you cannot have a democracy, liberty, or freedom under Islamic rule. Is there in the Quran, if we bother to read it? Is there? Mm. It can never happen. And then you have Biafrans on the other end of the spectrum that believes in libertarian values, not just liberty. We are libertarians, yes, to the extreme. When you grow up where we come from, you migrate a few miles away from your father's house so that your parents would even have to disturb you. You go there and grow your own family all by yourself. We come from a country where if you're born a male child, automatically, by right of nature, one day you will become a landlord. You will have a piece of land upon which to build. Irreducible. It never changes. Therefore, in our bones, not just in the blood, we have the DNA of freedom implanted in it. Mm. All these things changed, and we're trying to go back to it. So we can never, the excesses of what happens when you have a new African country won't apply in our case, because frankly, we're not like them.
Right.
Can never be.
Yeah.
We are different.
And doing so, as you say, is part of what Americans, what Westerners would refer to as seed planting, as putting a Christian, economically cooperative people in a place where we have really not had that.
Exactly. And not only that, you know, I travel across the stretch of Africa. I travel from Gabon all the way to Gambia.
Oh my.
All the time. And it would please me to see Americans, all these my people here, bring down their friends to come home,
yeah,
on holidays to say, these are my friends, I've brought them from the USA and all the rest, for us to enjoy. You can't do that anymore, can you? Because
no.
You're afraid of kidnappings and all the rest of it, sure, all these social vices and ills. The best thing that America can ever do in terms of its foreign policy is to support the emergence of Biafra.
Mm.
Ever.
Mm.
Because as you quite rightly pointed out, from Biafra, America can say, I can always use Biafra as an example.
Yeah.
The same way that Israel is used as an example in the Middle East. Yeah. Isn't it very funny that Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East,
yeah,
where you can vote, you can actually stand on the street corner and criticize anybody you,
yeah,
like.
Including the Israelis.
And nothing happens to you.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Nothing. I said to people that criticism can only make you get better. It won't kill you.
No.
It won't kill you. It does nothing to you. Somebody saying, oh, you're stupid, you're this. Tell me what you're doing with our money, our taxes. It's for you to stand there and explain.
Yeah.
That is why we run Radio Biafra the way we do. So that when we graduate from here into proper governance, by the grace of God, you can be able to stand up and defend your record before the people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That is how America became the strongest country in the world. Mm-hmm. Not by doing things in the secret.
No.
I said this to some, I used to say to them all the time, never be afraid of openness. After all, the greatest country in the world does all their inquiries in the open. Is it the Iraq gate?
Yeah.
Is it the Watergate,
yeah,
issue? Everything is in the open. Did it weaken the presidency? The answer is no, it made them stronger.
If you had one more thing to say to the people, either on video or in reports, or what would you want to say to Americans here who do value freedom? And I will want to hear what you have to say.
To those Americans here that value freedom and believe in it, it is also their duty to protect freedom wherever they can,
mm-hmm,
to protect people defending the ideals upon which the USA is founded upon. Very, very critical. It is no use saying I'm an American, things works here for me, because in a not too distant future won't work anymore. You can't travel to London because ISIS will be there, I
right,
can assure you.
Yeah.
Now, it is the duty of America. I mean, the world is at a crossroads right now. As I said earlier during my opening statement, the battle between good and evil.
Amen.
Light versus, amen, darkness.
Yeah.
So it is either you stand in faith with what you know to be correct,
mm,
than for you to be cowed by, how can I put it, by what you perceive to be the overwhelming preponderance of the forces of darkness. And,
mm,
because of that, you cower into a corner because they're going to come after you.
Mm-hmm.
The disease in your body, if you live it, it keeps festering. You must confront it.
London was a revelation to me for that very reason. More Islamic people than I had ever experienced in one place, including all over Austria, Hungary, where I was, and there were some there, but London was, and there was a protest the day that we were there, and we were walking by Westminster Abbey, and the protest was gigantic, and it was Gazans protesting against Israel, and they were being protected by the UK police, and as is their right to free speech, but one of the signs read "Britain accomplice to murder," and it didn't dawn on me until what you've just said how ironically true that statement is.
But it is true.
What they have supported will come to bite them.
That's what I tell them all the time, that the British made a monumental mistake by supporting the death of 3.5 million of my people. The worst mistake ever made. They will come after them and they will kill them. You mark my words somewhere. So the British Isles will be overrun by Islam.
Yeah.
Because they are there already. Do you know that they don't pay for their parking tickets?
Yes.
Do you know that?
I knew.
The number one name in the UK for a child is Muhammad.
That's correct.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yes. Go and have a look at it. It is there. So the UK government and her people supported the emergence of Bosnia-Herzegovina from a predominantly Christian Orthodox Serbia and before that Yugoslavia. Yeah. They supported the emergence of Albania, also Muslim. And what's the other one again? There's Albania, there's Kosovo as well.
And the US did too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They supported the freedoms of all the Arab countries away from the Ottoman Empire, you know, Lawrence of Arabia or the rest of it. The British occupied Palestine and refused the right of passage. I read Leon Uris's book, Exodus. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever read it before. Mm-hmm. I read it. How they refused Exodus to dock. Mm-hmm. I think it was in Haifa or so. Mm-hmm. By the British garrison there, saying no to them, that they can't come in. But you can quite easily go to the same Bible that you read all the time and see who owns the land. They can see it very clearly. Because there is something about humanity, I would say, that baffles me. You have before you all the available facts and evidence, and you consciously choose to ignore it. There's something wrong with that person, and also the British state. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't really surprise me at all. And I've said to them before that you have something against the children of God. Mm. That's the British people. Of course they did. In Israel, they didn't want to go away. The British officers were within the Jordanian. In fact, the entire officer class of the Jordanian army that fought the Israel in the War of Independence, where people didn't know this, was staffed by British officers.
Yes.
Really? Yes, go and have a look. The Jordanian army, go and have a look. They're still lost. Anyway,
yeah.
Now, the fact remains that we must be bold enough. America is the last bastion of hope. That is why sometimes Obama's administration, I wonder. I don't know what's going on.
I do too.
We must stand up and for some time do away with political. I can't stand political correctness. Do away with it for some minute and face the hard reality. If somebody has a problem that requires invasive surgery, you cut them open to get at the problem and then resolve it.
Right.
There is no need applying ointment or trying to be very nice to them when people are festering and dying on the inside. That is what he has to do. He needs to be decisive. The support for Israel is critical. It is critical. There is no way you can use human shield or launch attacks against a sovereign nation from the comfort of a, you know, children's classroom and don't expect some measure of reprisal. When the Japanese attacked America, America responded. When Hitler attacked Britain, Churchill responded. You never allowed tyranny or terror to prevail. Why must other people be allowed to live under that? It's not possible. If you don't help us, we all sink in this one big gigantic cauldron of deceit and lies
and darkness.
And darkness, yeah. Of course, very, very important.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. What an eye-opening experience.
Thank you.